Benvenuti tifosi napoletani to another edition of the Far From Vesuvius podcast. I am your host, Rafa Rispo, and I am here today to interview a very special guest. His name is Dre Cordero, and he is from beIN Sports. He covers La Liga. He covered Serie A for 5 years alongside Matteo Bonetti. Shout out to Matteo, by the way, for pointing me in his direction. It's been a couple years since we talked to Dre. And last time we did, he was working for beIN still, but Serie A was also on beIN, so we had a nice chat about Napoli Juve. And now I've asked him to come on here today to identify some of Barcelona's issues, what's going on with them, the 4-1-1, how they're going to look. I also asked him who's better, Maradona, Messi. But he'll give us his insight on that. So I hope you guys enjoy his interview. Right after, I'm going to go over just a few things that we need to know about the match from a Napoli perspective. So enjoy this interview, and I'll talk to you in a few. Here's Dre Cordero. Okay, Vesuviani, we have a very special guest with us today. Joining us on Far From Vesuvius is Andres Cordero. From beIN Sports, he has a lot of history with Serie A. He used to cover Serie A when it was on beIN Sports with Matteo Bonetti. So, Dre, how are you, man? How's it going?
Good, good. You got me nostalgic now, though. Now I'm thinking back to the days of me and Matteo calling, you know, 3 to 5 games a week from a Serie A, and we used to have a lot of fun on Sundays with something we call multi-calcio, which is with all those games sort of thrown together at the same time. We do this like whip around coverage of all the Serie A games. It was one of the most fun things I've done through my career. So to be honest, I mean, I love working in football. I love the stuff that I'm covering right now, but I sincerely miss Serie A. I feel like I learned so much about football covering that league for a good 5 years of beIN Sports that, you know, get a little nostalgic thinking back.
I do too. I used to love listening to you guys together. It's nice to still hear Matteo, but the two of you were a real good tandem. I do miss that. And multicultural is something I sort of really got to appreciate while Serie A was on beIN. We used to grow up watching Rai, yeah. And they used to do La Giostra del Gol. So anytime there was a goal scored, you know, the squealy di tromba, the trumpets, you know.
Yeah, we blatantly ripped that off. We thought, you know, an American audience would really enjoy it. And at first it was a little bit of pushback. People were like, oh, I want to watch, you know, this game. And then you get 15 minutes in and there's been 5 games scored across Serie A and people are all of a sudden on board. So, we absolutely ripped off Giostra with that, but it was fun.
Well, I'm happy you did. All right, Andre, so we're here, you know, we're here to get the lowdown, the nitty-gritty, so to speak, because you still do cover La Liga on beIN, and our opponents on Saturday are Barcelona in the second leg, 1-1 in the first leg. We're here to get the, you know, the 4-1-1 on what's going on in Barcelona, because I know that there's a lot going on. So I'll get right to it. You know, again, like I said, first leg 1-1. A lot's been made of Barcelona missing Vidal and Busquets, and now Arthur also for the match. Vidal and Busquets are suspended from the first leg. But how much of an impact do you think that their absences will have?
That's pretty significant. I would add to that that they're also thin at the back because of Umtiti's sort of recurring injuries. Samuel Umtiti, who came to Barcelona with a lot of promise, suffered some injuries that gave him some major setbacks and just has never been the same player with any kind of regularity or consistency since. And so that kind of just leaves Piqué and Lenglet as the only healthy central defenders. Lenglet himself is coming back from a little bit of a fitness issue. They have a young Barca B center back, Araujo. It's a young Uruguayan defender who's shown some good promise as well. But, you know, we don't know yet if he's ready for the bright lights of the Champions League. He's only just making his way back from injury. And so Busquets and Vidal were actually two players that were considered options for emergency center back positions in the event that Lenglet and Araujo weren't ready. Because up until very, very recently, Piqué was literally the only healthy center back that Barcelona had. So they've got some guys coming off of injury now. Lenglet seems to be okay. He's probably going to be the one who starts. But obviously, without Busquets or Arturo Vidal in the midfield, those are two pretty important pieces for Quique Setién. Busquets much more so than Arturo Vidal, but Vidal had been a pseudo favorite of both Quique Setién and Ernesto Valverde, just because he I think gets a bad rap. And I know in Serie A, people appreciate Arturo Vidal for his time there and his versatility and the variety of positions that he played, particularly at Juve, where I think he was a center back sometimes, and he was a right back at one point, and you know, obviously played mostly in midfield. The same thing for Chile, where he played in a variety of positions and did it all very, very well. And so I think he's been a player that's been able to plug some holes for a Barcelona side that just, you look at the construction of it, and it's not a complete team. It's a team that's missing some factors, and they've had to like sort of patch things up along the way with like promoting Ansu Fati because they needed some width. They didn't have anybody who could play at left wing after the injury to Dembele. So it's a team that's been sort of falling apart throughout the season due to some injuries, due to some off-season issues. But specifically with Busquets, he is very much the metronome. He's hugely important for Barcelona in terms of winning the ball high up the pitch, in terms of always picking out the right pass when he does win it back. He's never been the fastest player, and he has lost a bit of a step now that he's past the age of 30, but I still think his influence is absolutely massive for Barcelona's midfield. And in his absence, I think Quique Setién has some decisions to make. Does he play Frankie de Jong in the same position as Busquets? I know a lot of people say, well, that's De Jong's preferred position, but it wasn't really at Ajax because he was in a double pivot. He wasn't the single pivot. There's another possibility where he plays Riqui Puig, who's shown some promising things, a Barcelona B kid who you know, is much more energetic and attacking, and actually a pretty good complement to Leo Messi in that event. Then you get Rakitic playing in that defensive midfield role. So I think there's some questions about what Barcelona are going to look like, but certainly they are weaker without certainly Busquets, and I would add also Arturo Vidal. There is a chance that Dembele could recover. He's been training, but he's not played in quite some time due to injury. So it's unlikely that he's in any sort of real game shape.
And now Arthur, he's not, he's choosing not to play. Is that correct for Barcelona, or is Juve?
It's the other way around. Barcelona the other basically way around. Decided. Yeah, Barcelona basically decided. Well, we don't know, right? It may be that Barcelona trying to save face, but certainly Arturo kind of checked out after the move was confirmed. So he basically the president of Barcelona, Josep Bartomeu, has come out publicly to say that Arturo sort of disrespected his teammates with his attitude. There was an issue when the season sort of started to unravel. I mean, it was a long process of unraveling in a sense for Barcelona, but when it came down to the real crunch time down at the end of the season, they dropped 2 points at Celta Vigo. Celta were a team battling relegation. Balaidos, where Celta play, is a difficult place to play. But in that game in particular, Artur was a pretty big disappointment. When Barcelona were up 2-1, trying to hold on, not playing particularly well, Quique Setién turned to Artur to bring him in off the bench. Artur, who's a player who can, you know, hold on to possession, who can help them sort of, you know, hide the ball away from Celta, he just wasn't having it. His mind seemed to be elsewhere. He took forever to get ready to warm up. And in the process, you know, he finally gets in with like 4 minutes left. I think by that time, like, Celta had either just equalized or equalized immediately after, and they dropped those 2 points. I think that's the point where it really soured the relationship between Artur and Barcelona, at least the Barcelona brass. And so, yeah, I would say that essentially, Artur is no longer a Barcelona player.
Okay. Well, you know, Napoli and Barca actually began the season with Ancelotti and Valverde, respectively. And you mentioned Setién over there. He's in now, and so is Gattuso. Both clubs have had their issues. And, you know, I know you haven't been covering Serie A much, but I'm pretty sure you're aware of Napoli's issues this season with Ancelotti that they had. But Napoli found somewhat of a resurgence under Gattuso, winning Coppa Italia. But the thing is Barcelona, you know, their issues cost them the La Liga. They lost out on the title. We mentioned, you know, you mentioned a few of the issues that they had. Can you identify any other issues Barcelona have had leading up to this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it has been sort of the psychological stuff off the field, right? So they had this issue with a company called i3 Ventures, which is sort of a huge scandal. That Messi came out and sort of blasted the ownership over. I think that's sort of been stamped down for now, at least in terms of like kicking the can down the road to deal with it after the season. But I'm not sure if you heard about this story where Barcelona had actually hired an internet not research firm, but like some internet social media firm that created all of these fake accounts that were putting out all these social media posts that were disparaging to Barcelona players, and in some cases, Barcelona players' wives and girlfriends, and was sort of complimentary toward the president, Josep Bartomeu, and sort of the people that are loyal to him. And that, you can imagine, did not sit very well in the locker room.
I did not hear that. No.
That's caused some huge sort of fractions, it would seem, between the people making the decisions at Barcelona and the players who have been there for a long time, who have won everything, who in some cases are World Cup winners, and probably feel they should be treated a hell of a lot better than that. That's just sort of an idea of what's going on off the pitch for Barcelona, right? They have a president who most fans are not happy about. They're desperate for the elections coming in 2021. And you got to imagine that at some level, all of this sort of institutional chaos, you know, just sort of seeps down and doesn't create the best climate or the best atmosphere for a locker room. Now, maybe the locker room is sort of insulated from it and they can separate themselves. But you got to imagine that's not sort of the best situation, the best scenario. You compare that to the La Liga champions, Real Madrid, where, you know, the manager is widely liked. People are happy with Florentino Perez. People are happy with most of the signings, even though players like James and Gareth Bale essentially were surplus to requirements on the final stretch, even though Hazard had a pretty unremarkable first season. There just seemed to be this sort of positive vibe around Real Madrid and all the contrary at Barcelona. And that's not reactionary based on them missing out on the league title. That's been sort of a constant from the start of the season and was true even of the midway point when they fired Ernesto Valverde, replacing Quique Setién. At the time, Barcelona were in first place in La Liga, right, level on points with Real Madrid. I think there's been a little bit of an improvement under Quique Setién, not a big enough one. I think Setién has managed to fix some of Barcelona's issues, but not others. So, for example, one issue that Barca have had, at least in the first half of the season, is you would never think this because of their style of play and their reputation, but they really struggled to play the ball out of the back under Valverde the first half of the campaign. Right. Things just weren't working. Teams could press them very effectively. In fact, I think this Napoli playing against that Barcelona would have an even better chance than they do. And we'll talk about Napoli's chances and Barcelona's chances in a moment. So Quique Setién comes in. All of a sudden, Barcelona are better playing the ball out of the back. They have, you know, more options to play, you know, through the midfield. They just look a little bit better in that regard. They're not conceding as many goals. I think one of the things Quique Setién did was help them defensively, whether that was sort of positional or whatnot. They scored fewer goals under Quique Setién than they did under Ernesto Valverde, but still scored more goals than anybody else in La Liga over, you know, that half of the season under Setién. But there's still a team that doesn't have a lot of width, right? So one of the things I mentioned earlier, Ansu Fati is 17 years old, has been promoted to the first team. One of the few players that is a natural, you know, wide player, because you think of Antoine Griezmann, wants to be more central. Luis Suarez is a center for Lionel Messi, wants to go wherever the ball is, but he also takes up a more central position and has become much more of a number 10 than a right winger, as he was for, you know, a lot of his career, or a false nine, as he was under Guardiola. And so they don't have that sort of natural width, and that makes it really difficult to play against certain teams. And I think Napoli could be one of those teams, right? Because Napoli, especially if Lorenzo Insigne can play, can do some real damage in the wide areas. And if you have a very narrow Barcelona, that's something that Napoli could exploit.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the question that remains to be seen. Is Lorenzo Insigne going to be able to play? We have Chucky Lozano ready. If not, you know, and I just find it intriguing that, you know, a lot of the things that you say about Barcelona and their season is quite parallel to Napoli's, you know, besides the fact that Napoli finished in seventh and Barcelona were fighting for a title. You know, we brought in Gattuso, 8 losses under Gattuso, but we finished third in the sort of the ritorno, like last, you know, second half of the season, finished third behind only Atalanta and Milan, who were playing out of their minds.
I'll tell you what. So there was an improvement under Gattuso, obviously. But if you look at those first 15 games under Ancelotti, and I know you can't do it this way, but this is an interesting sort of thought experiment for to sort of put into context how the Ancelotti portion of Napoli season went versus how the Gattuso version of Napoli went, at least in respect to Serie A, you know, leaving aside the fact that they won the Coppa Italia, which was hugely impressive. And actually, I think I have some thoughts about that game that could be a parallel or relevant to the game against Barcelona. But if you apply the points per game of Ancelotti in those 15 games, to a 38-game season, Napoli miss out on European football altogether. I think they finished eighth in Serie A in that scenario. Whereas if you apply Gattuso's points per game to a 38-game season, they do one spot better and finish ahead of Milan, who are getting a lot of plaudits for the way they finished the season. So I think there was a marked improvement, obviously, under Gattuso.
Well, yeah, you know, there really was. There really was. So in your opinion, what do you think would be the most intriguing matchup on the pitch for Saturday?
So this is not meant to sound disparaging, and I think some people may take it that way. But I really do think that a lot of it is Barcelona versus themselves. I think we've seen very different versions of Barca this season. And honestly, it's not taking anything away from Napoli. I think Napoli can absolutely beat Barcelona. That's not a prediction, but this is a Barca team that I think can beat absolutely anybody, whether it's Bayern Munich, Paris Saint-Germain, or Real Madrid, but can also lose to anybody, as they did with Osasuna down the final stretch, or dropping points away to Celta, who are relegation-threatened club, points dropped against inferior opposition that effectively cost them the league title. And so I think Barcelona's midfield is a bit of a puzzle right now. Like, is it De Jong or Rakitic in the hole? Is Ricky Puig and his energy going to get an opportunity? Sergio Roberto, who has played a lot of the last several seasons at right back out of necessity since the departure of Dani Alves, because I don't know that they ever adequately replaced Alves. I think Semedo's a fine player, but nowhere near the level of Dani. And so Sergio Roberto offered some good things at right back. When he plays in midfield, I think he's terrific. And so for me, the most interesting battle in this, as in a lot of games, I for whatever reason, have a bias towards central midfielders. For me, those are the ball players. For me, that's where the game is really, really interesting. And Napoli over the years, you know, going back to at least as far back as Sarri, had a very, very interesting midfield. And that midfield triangle that's just sort of been a permanent by the way, is it Diego Dama who's expected to start? Zielinski and Fabian Ruiz? Like, would that be the midfield trio, do you think, against Barcelona?
I'm thinking it will be Deme, Zielinski, Fabian. Yeah, I think you're going to see a very similar lineup to the lineup you saw against Lazio in the last match of the season, where I think the only real question is, do you start Manolas or Maximovic in the back? But the midfield, so Lobotka started against Lazio, but I really could see Deme slotting in there over Lobotka. But, you know, honestly, the midfield for Napoli hasn't really been much of an issue, especially since Deme and Lobotka came in. They were massive signings in the summer.
Yeah, so I'm very familiar with Lobotka. He was playing at Celta.
Right.
For the first half of the season, and he often did look like a poor man's Verratti. Like, you could swear you were watching like the Pescara version of Verratti at times while I'm watching him play. So I thought he was going to do big things for Napoli, but I haven't had a chance to see him quite as much play in Serie A. But for me, I think that's one of the like most important things about this game, is how that Barcelona midfield, that at times I think has been not adventurous enough, has been a little bit slow and predictable, just because of the personnel, right? You got most of those players until the emergence of Ricky Puig, and until recently Sergio Roberto got more opportunities in his natural position at center mid, you know, the likes of Busquets, Rakitic, Artur, throwing Arturo Vidal, maybe he's a little bit of an exception here, but they were playing very much within themselves, and sometimes it felt like possession for possession's sake. And so that's where I think Barcelona need to really perform against this Napoli team, is that midfield has – this is one of the reasons why I would like to see for Barcelona a Ricky Puig. I think he's adventurous. I think he's breaking through lines both with his passes and with his dribbles. I think he likes to get close to the goal. I'd like to see that version of Frankie de Jong as well, who we would see at times at Ajax get, you know, much closer to the 18-yard box. I think he's been very reserved in his first season at Barcelona. So just, you know, to beat the dead horse, for me the most interesting matchup is going to be that midfield trio of Napoli against the midfield trio of Barcelona. And then maybe an honorable mention here is Barca's back line are not particularly quick, right? Gerard Piqué is just flat out slow. I think he's still a terrific center back, one of the best in La Liga. He takes such good care of the ball. His distribution is terrific. He's very much an organizer of that back line, which in his absence, you really feel like they are much more in disarray. But he is quite slow, no acceleration, you know, maybe a bit of a long strider. Lenglet alongside him, not 100%. So I think there's opportunities for guys like, you know, high energy players like Callejon, like Mertens, like Insigne, to get in behind the test, you know, get those one-on-one situations, 2v1 situations against Piqué, against Lenglet in open field. And that's where Barcelona, you know, are really vulnerable. I guess when anybody's really vulnerable, but Barcelona in particular, because of that high line and because of the lack of pace of those center backs, that's where Napoli could maybe exploit Barcelona. Of course, once you get there, you still have to beat Marc-Andre ter Stegen, who's been terrific this year.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. So a few weeks ago, Messi said that Barcelona need to be careful of the lose to Napoli. Gattuso, before the win versus Lazio, said that this Napoli can't tickle Barcelona. For me, the difference is, you know, Napoli were essentially playing 12 Serie A matches to sort of get ready for the Champions League match against Barcelona, the Champions League period in August, say they get past Barcelona. I mean, you know, you win a Coppa Italia, you've got your European spot locked up. At the time, we were 12 points behind Atalanta, and we needed to beat them to get to 9 points behind, which is still a, you know, pretty tough ask. We lose, we end up 15, and then like from there on, it was sort of like, okay, pack it in, let's get this season, you know, over with and get ready for Barcelona. So for me, the fact that Gattuso says that this Napoli can't tickle Barcelona, I think Napoli are able to get up for any team that they play against. They beat Juventus, they did well against Barcelona, they won the Coppa Italia, you know, went in the Champions League with Ancelotti, even they were unbeaten. So for me, they can get up for it. But Gattuso said what he said. What say you, man? What do you think? What do you think is gonna happen? And we're a very prediction. We shy away from predictions on our show, but I'm gonna ask you what you think you have. What do you think happens?
Yeah, so I still think Barcelona are favorites in this, right? Okay. And especially at home, even without fans, the Camp Nou obviously not as imposing a venue to go play in when there's zero fans versus some 90,000 fans, especially for these knockout games in the Champions League. So I would still say Barcelona are favorites. I don't know that I would feel the same way if the second leg was at the Stadio San Paolo, because Barca had some real issues against much worse opposition than Napoli when it comes to playing away from home.
Okay.
At home, I would favor Barcelona to win this. But honestly, as I alluded to earlier, Barcelona are a team that I think could beat absolutely anybody in the Champions League and can lose to any one of these remaining teams just as well, because they've been so inconsistent, because they haven't really put together a lot of games where for 90 minutes they were, you know, clearly the better side consistently. I think they're a team more so than in previous seasons that not only play, but really let you play as well. And Barcelona aren't comfortable as a team that this is a common phrase in Spain. I don't know if it really translates to Italian, but in Spain, you talk about teams that know how to suffer, right? And so Diego Simeone's Atletico Madrid are a team that traditionally, historically know how to suffer. I think Real Madrid at times know how to suffer because they don't mind not having the ball. They'll sort of trade blows with you. I think Barcelona are a team that don't know how to suffer. And when you take the ball away from them, a team like Napoli can do that. But when you take the ball away from them, you know, they start to get a little bit rattled. Maybe it's sort of something outside of their comfort zone. And you can exploit some of their weaknesses better that way. So short of making any predictions, I would say that Napoli are absolutely in this. And Barcelona are at times their worst enemy.
It's going to be a very intriguing matchup. I absolutely can't wait for it. And whoever gets past, you know, whoever gets past into the quarterfinals, one leg Champions League really, really excites me. You know, anybody can win this thing if you ask me.
Well, so, we saw Inter Getafe as a one off in the Europa League, and I mean that was as much fun as I've had watching that stage of the Europa League in a long time. There's something to be said about the stakes of a single elimination match at a neutral ground. And granted, it's probably not a permanent solution. It's sort of a COVID audible, if you will. But it does make for really fun matchups. We saw the same thing in Spain this season where they finally altered the format of the Copa del Rey, the domestic cup, so that it was a one-off. And so that you did play at the lower team's home ground. And it just was so much more compelling. I think the same is true of the Champions League.
Was that a decision made before COVID or was that some? Oh, yeah. That's great. No, that's great.
People have been screaming for that for years because it's such an unfair advantage, especially when you're playing teams in the second and third division and the big teams get usually a home leg as the second leg to try and fix whatever mistakes they might have potentially made. And so what you got often was big teams would play some of the kids in the first leg, and then depending on how that result went, would play their full team. So forget all that now. It was one and done, and it made for really, really compelling matchups.
And we got Roma, Sevilla coming up today, too, in the Europa League, and then Napoli, Barcelona, Napoli. So Italy, Spain, all over the place, man.
Yeah.
You did mention that the structure of the Champions League and the Europa League being one off from the quarterfinals on is just a COVID thing. One thing that is also a COVID thing, but I think is being tossed around for Serie A to stay next year, is the five substitutions. What do you think about that? I'm pretty sure that was a FIFA-wide decision to make five substitutions during the game. What are your thoughts about having five instead of three?
I personally like it, and I would not at all hate if that became a regular thing, if that were to stick around. I don't know that it will. So, for example, I was reading that I believe the Premier League voted today not to extend the five sub rule for the next Premier League season. So they're going to go back to three. I really like it, to be honest. I think it allows, especially late in games, where we've been talking for a long time about how congested the football calendar is, particularly for European teams, particularly for the European giants that are playing something like 60 games a year. Absolutely. Between, you know, league, cup, sometimes two domestic cups, European competition and national team commitments. And they keep adding stuff like nations leagues. And, you know, so they're really taxing the legs of these footballers. And so I have no issue with allowing four or five substitutions. I think it was ingenious to limit it to three in-game instances so that it wasn't a major sort of time stalling tactic where you could, you know, just eat up clock by bringing on five subs in the final 10 games. So I thought that was good foresight to make it that way. I'm a big fan of that rule, to be honest. I think it gives coaches some tactical versatility late in games. I think it makes the end of games more exciting because if a player is absolutely gassed, now you have more opportunities to replace them, put fresher legs out there. And there's a debate about whether it helps the big teams or helps the small teams. And I think intuitively you would guess, yeah, the deeper rosters would be benefited because they can bring in more players of greater quality. They can rotate the squad better. But I think there's some teams that just stylistically it benefits as well. I think teams that press with a lot of energy, teams that play with a high intensity, even if the quality drops off a little bit, at least the style is the same. The style of play is the same when you can bring some fresh legs on and continue to press, you know, through the 70th and 80th minute. So I think there are teams that know how to take advantage of it without having a huge deep squad, and I'd love to see it stay.
Yeah, I share the same sentiment. Okay, Dre, I got to ask you one last question, man. This is, sure. It's got to happen. Messi or Maradona?
Yeah, so I'll answer it simply and then I'll expand, right? For me, it's Messi. But I think these arguments are sometimes, or these debates are sometimes emotive, and they're not any more sort of interesting or, you know, thought-provoking than yay Messi or yay Maradona or yay Cristiano. You know what I mean? It's just sort of an emotional or emotive response that's based often on preference and on taste. There are measurables we can use, right? We can compare stats, we can compare titles, we can compare the individual impact on their teams and whatnot. And I think in a lot of those, Messi wins out. For me, Messi is the best player I've ever seen play football. Live, TV, on YouTube. It's just for 15 years now, maybe more than 15 years, he continues to show us things that I've never seen before. Like he'll occasionally score a goal that I'm looking at myself like, how did he do that? And then you see videos of Thierry Henry sort of explaining when he was in training with Barcelona and he saw Messi do things and he was like, how did he do that? So he impresses the people who play the game better than ever I could, know the game better than I ever could, and continues to do it even at the age of 33. And so I think if we're comparing Messi and Maradona, And this is not in any way meant to be disparaging about Maradona. I think often when we make these comparisons, what you're doing is you're comparing the contemporary with the mythological, right? Because a player who's been away from football as long as Maradona has, that myth has continued to grow. The way we look at him has been sort of warped for better and for worse. I think for better on the field and for worse off the pitch. But at 33 years old, Messi's coming off not one of his best seasons, but an incredible season and one of the best seasons in the career of any other footballer, right? Where he led La Liga in goals, he led La Liga in assists, he led La Liga in dribbles. In a Barcelona team that had some deficiencies, Messi papered over all the cracks. For me, he's just beyond anything I've ever seen from anyone else. And when you compare Maradona at the same age, at 32, Maradona was on his way out of Sevilla back to Argentina to go play for Newell's Old Boys. He still was quite good at Boca Juniors, but was never really the same player. And so the consistency, the volume, the ingenuity, the evolution of Messi throughout the years, from a right winger to a false nine to now a traditional number 10, I think we're going to continue to see Messi's game evolve. Because, so for example, one thing you might see against Napoli is this 4-3-1-2 formation that sort of Quique Setién had seemed to settle on down the final of the stretch of the season, so he could accommodate Griezmann, Suarez, and Messi. And that had Messi playing as a delicatista behind both Suarez and Griezmann. And so if Messi plays as a forward, I think he's the best forward on the planet. If Messi plays as a midfielder, I think he's the best midfielder on the planet. And I think because of his qualities, his passing, his vision, his understanding of the game, he can continue to develop and grow as a midfielder, a more central midfielder, a regista if he wants to someday. I think he'll extend sort of the period in which he's on top because he has so many tools in his arsenal.
Do you think Messi ever leaves Barcelona?
If I had to put money on it, I would say he retired at Barcelona. But that's not to say that I think it's a guarantee that he retires at Barcelona. He's talked throughout his entire career about eventually going back to Newell's Old Boys, his boyhood club, which he left at 12 or 13 years old. I don't know how honest that is, whether that's just wishful thinking on his part or whether he would really like to go and get that experience. Messi has young children. His family's in Barcelona. He has just immense amount of power at that club, and understandably so. I think he's making like over €1 million a week right now at Barca. And so is it a possibility that he goes and plays in the Premier League for, Pep Guardiola at Manchester City, or that he goes to Serie A like Cristiano Ronaldo has done later on in his career? It's absolutely possible that he does that. And I think the current instability in the Barcelona front office would maybe lean more in that direction than if everything was fine, everybody was happy with the president and the board and whatnot. Barcelona traditionally can be very combustible in the front office. And so I would never rule out things getting so bad that he just decides this isn't worth it and ends his career somewhere else. And even if he does, I think Barcelona fans would still have to be sort of eternally grateful for this just amazing icon giving you this many seasons of this high a level of football.
I was just going to say, there's not much, there aren't many others out there like Messi who's been at one club all his career. And you mentioned that he was at Newell's Old Boys as a 12 or 13 year old. But I mean, in an adult, professional career, he's been at one club. And, Totti and De Rossi are the only other two that come to mind to me. And, in terms of Italian football, of somebody that's stayed with one club all their career, and Messi's one of them. And you can't take away everything that he's ever done, and I don't fault you for picking Messi over Maradona. It's okay. We're a Napoli podcast. We have to pick Napoli. Our listeners know how I feel about the issue. We did a Maradona Era Chronicles podcast while we were shut down for COVID, and we've finished recording 88 89. We're about to record 89 90 soon, and then 90 really? 91 obviously. Yeah, and it was really cool. It was so for us it was really interesting because I grew up, I knew Maradona when I grew up. I'm 37 years old, so I in 86 87 88 was when I was like learning the game, and my dad being from Napoli, and but to actually study his game. Mm-hmm. And to study the games he played and watch full matches and, look at the team around him and study the team around him, too. It's like I have my reasons for Maradona being better, but there's no real wrong answer, in my opinion. You can't really have a definitive right, correct answer. For me, one of the things are Maradona, the state of pitches in Serie A or in the 80s were atrocious, but he still did what he did.
The physicality of the game.
Brutal.
It's an era of football where you had literal enforcers. I mean, that stuff has been stamped out of the game, and probably for the better, right? Because you want more. You don't want to see.
Right. It creates a longevity.
Maradona's leg broken in La Liga. Exactly. You know what I mean? You want to see the best players stay on the pitch. So I feel you on that. Yeah, and it's not to say, by the way, that modern footballers don't get kicked. I think you look at Messi throughout most of his career. You look at Neymar as a very, very good example of players who get constantly kicked because they have a sort of a provocative style of play, because they have the trickery and they're quick, and so players get in there late. But in Maradona's era, you had literal enforcers who were out there to kick you out of the game. Like that was their role. And Maradona was almost always the target of it. And it's incredible the sort of strength that he had to still play the way that he played, while essentially involved in an MMA fight for 90 minutes.
All right, he is at Dre Cordero on Twitter. He's on Bein Sports. Catch him. I still do whenever I get a chance to. Dre, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you enjoy the match. CBS Sports Network in the U.S. For those who missed that. announcement that I made on our last podcast. But please do catch Dre on BN, because you got La Liga, you got Liga, and you got Turkish League too now, I think, right? Is that correct?
Turkish Super League, yeah. I think this year we're going to have a big focus on La Liga and on the French Ligue 1. The Ligue 1 has become really, really interesting in terms of a hub for talent of, players coming up. And I think you've seen that a lot of them like sort of migrate to the Premier League. We do have the Turkish Super League as well. So, you get the Istanbul Giants like Beşiktaş and Fenerbahçe and Galatasaray. But more than anything, it's La Liga and Ligue 1 that I'm working on and really excited for this season. And just on some personal news, I've got one of my dream jobs this year. So it's been a tough year, I think, globally. But I consider myself blessed. Inter Miami. So Major League Soccer has a club in my hometown. I've grown up in Miami. I'm originally from Cuba. But, David Beckham brought his talents to South Beach. And I got hired. The voice of Inter Miami, so I'm working on that as well, and it's just been an absolute joy.
Oh, so you're in the office, huh?
Sorry?
Are you in the office in Inter Miami? I didn't catch what you said.
No, I got hired as the play-by-play voice of
as the play-by-play voice. That's amazing. Awesome. Very cool. Excited about Inter Miami too. I got family down there who is very excited about that once things get back to normal. Andres, thank you so much for coming on, taking a few minutes to talk about Barcelona and Napoli. Enjoy the game. And we wish you well, man, you and the family and the kids.
I enjoyed this chat. Thanks so much, and good luck. I hope Napoli get through.
Thank you. All right, there you have it. That was Dre Cordero giving us his insight on the match. Barcelona-Napoli, Champions League, second leg. Don't forget it's 1-1. Barcelona do have the away goal. So basically, we have to win. We have to score. We have to score two, possibly. One will get us through if we hold them. They're, like you heard Dre said, their defense is quite depleted. So if we can get a few goals, they will be starting. Barcelona will be. Messi, Griezmann, and Suarez. So they will be attacking us as well. We need to be sharp on defense. But their defense is really, really thin. So if we can get a few goals, hopefully Insigne is back. He says that he feels optimistic about coming back for the match, but you do have to know that he's not at 100%, that's for sure. Another really good piece of news from this week is Barcelona, the Catalan Health Council has deemed Barcelona-Napoli playable at Camp Nou. There was a little bit of questions that were raised by Aurelio De Laurentiis about if we should play them, in Portugal or in Germany, because of the fact that there's still sort of fears, COVID fears out there. But I think that's everywhere. What can you do? This thing is worldwide. Also, interesting bit of news that I just came across is that Diego Maradona Jr., the son of Diego Maradona, has spoken out on Barcelona Napoli, and he calls his father an alien and a terrestrial Messi. So he actually goes in and says that, his father is, contrary to what Dre said, that his father is the god of football and Messi is the best among the humans. Apple doesn't fall far from the tree there, does it? Anyway, a quick little note as well. Should Napoli progress to the Champions League final, that match will be on CBS Sports Network. Contrary to what I reported after the OMA interview, that you'd have to get the All Access Pass. The All Access Pass is necessary, however, for the quarterfinal and the semifinal. So if Napoli do beat Barcelona and we do go to the quarterfinals, you do have to get a CBS All Access Pass. This game will be on CBS Sports Network. This is for the fans in the States if they want to catch Napoli in the Champions League. But yes, the final will be on CBS Sports Network Sunday, August 22nd. Okay. That's going to do it for us here at Rafa Napoli 83 at Far From Vesuvius. Catch us on Instagram, catch us on Facebook as well. And I hope you guys have a great day. Enjoy the match. Let's get this Champions League, baby. Forza Napoli.